Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 125, Pragmatism. Starry-eyed naivety is probably not the best attribute for a rocket scientist or an astronaut. Getting humanity into space is mostly about economics, although there's always some geopolitical issues to take into account. For example, Dear Cheap Astronomy, could war get us into space? There's been a long-running dialogue here at Cheap Astronomy about what economic drivers might transform us into a proper space-faring species with moon bases, Mars bases, and all that. But it is hard to imagine what economic drivers might really work. Space is hard, and it's also darned expensive. Tourism could be a driver. After all, there has been a bit of millionaire tourism happening lately, mostly just flights above the atmosphere, although we have put some tourists into orbit, and there are plans to send tourists around the moon in coming years. So that is something, but until there's some economies of scale, it's hard to see how tourism is really going to lead the way. After all, space is not only hard and expensive, but it's also freaking dangerous. For all the same reasons that submarine tourism is unlikely to take off, space tourism also looks a bit doubtful. Of course, another economic driver might be space mining, but despite Cheap Astronomy's relentless advocacy for crashing shit on the moon, that still seems no closer to reality. So, is war an option? It does seem to be the case that the US-Soviet Union Cold War did get things moving and probably got Neil and Buzz onto the moon. And ongoing international tensions have filled our skies with spy satellites, and a whole range of space warfare strategies have at least been considered. Ground-to-space attacks are fairly straightforward. Beginning in 1985, when the US destroyed one of their aging satellites with a missile launched from an F-15 fighter jet while it was in vertical ascent. The orbital debris was tracked over the next 20 years, with the last big piece deorbiting in 2004. Russia, India and China have also targeted and destroyed their own satellites, although they were met with outraged complaints about adding space junk to Earth orbit. Space-to-ground attacks are actually a lot more difficult. For example, you can't realistically drop a bomb from orbit, since the satellite platform will be screaming over its target at about 8 kilometers a second, and there's no way a passively dropped bomb can stay on a planned trajectory when it first has to survive re-entry and then fall through the full width of the atmosphere. So if you want to hit a specific target, your only realistic option is some kind of precision-guided missile which has some kind of robust heat shielding. And in any case, as soon as your enemies know you've got a satellite weapons platform in orbit, they can just blow it out of the sky unless you burn a ton of fuel to constantly shift your orbit so as to evade any predictive targeting. So in nearly all respects, you are better off with a standard intercontinental ballistic missile, which can be launched stealthily from a stable surface platform that also has maintenance and upgrade capabilities. A James Bond villain-type laser weapon fired from orbit, which is able to cause significant damage on the ground, would need an absolute ton of electrical power, which you just can't get from solar panels and batteries, so forget it. You could try building a giant solar reflector in order to torch your enemies with a heat ray, but again, as soon as someone realizes what you're building, they'll just blow it out of the sky. In orbit, you are totally exposed. Space-to-space warfare has also had its first small steps. the Soviets actually installed and test-fired a space cannon mounted on the Salyut 3 station. The cannon was essentially an oversized machine gun intended to defend the station from the aggressive approach of another spacecraft. The Soviets also developed a handheld laser pistol for cosmonauts, which would have been about as deadly as a laser pointer, but the idea was to use it to burn out cameras and other optical devices on an aggressively approaching spacecraft. Trouble is, there never were any approaches by aggressive spacecraft, making it hard to justify any further developments in these areas. But anyhow, war is unlikely to help us get into space. Wars are mostly about destroying infrastructure rather than building it. And in most respects, Earth's orbit is a terrible place to mount an attack from. What history has shown us is that it's international tensions, suspicions, and rivalry that really get things moving. War is a dish best served cold.
This is the middle bit.
So what is going to get us into space? Economics and a bit of geopolitics. How it all comes together, though, might require a bit of the old and a bit of the new. Dear Cheap Astronomy, what is new space? You may have heard people talk about old space and new space. Old space is like NASA pouring billions into the slow-plodding development of huge one-off projects like the Space Launch System and the James Webb Space Telescope, where NASA operates with extreme risk aversion, determined that absolutely nothing can go wrong. New space is like SpaceX, where they quickly launch prototypes, and when those prototypes blow up, they have the data to explain why, so the next prototypes they launch don't have that flaw, and if those prototypes blow up, then the next generation don't have those flaws, and so on. With a mature design having been achieved through this process, SpaceX averaged around one launch a week in 2022, and it's managed over 1.5 launches a week so far in 2023. Those launches were mostly the tried and tested Falcon 9, and any SpaceX rockets that are still blowing up are mostly Starship prototypes. SpaceX's reusable first stage design, along with other economies of scale it can achieve by doing the same things rapidly over and over again, have made rocket launches much more affordable, which hence drives more business, and then more economies and efficiencies. Sounds great, right? Leaving poor old NASA in the dust. But let's remember, without old space, new space would never have happened, and anyone who's still working in old space would say they've just left the easy stuff to private enterprise, while NASA is now doing new things like the James Webb Space Telescope, where you just can't be slapdash about accommodating the odd failure here and there. The launch of the Hubble Space Telescope was a bit slapdash, since it was always intended to be upgradable in orbit. But sending a space telescope out to Lagrange Point 2 means it has to work straight up, or it's game over. Similarly, if you're going to send people to the Moon or Mars, you can't readily accommodate the odd failure here and there, because every time you fail, people die. So sure, new space is innovative and fast, but it's mostly innovative and fast about finding new ways to put things into Earth orbit, which we've been doing since 1957. Indeed, most of the fast-paced launches we are seeing at the moment are launching satellite constellations, which are multiple identical satellites meant to establish global coverage of functions like internet connectivity, aircraft surveillance, and ground imagery. And you establish these satellite constellations by launching pretty much the same thing over and over again. And if you are doing the same thing over and over again, you should be finding ways to do things faster and cheaper. It would be a worry if you didn't. The majority of activity directed towards the moon at the moment is all about governments doing old space, where any failures are pretty catastrophic and generally aren't followed by another mission straight afterwards with slightly improved features, although that does happen sometimes. And there are also private enterprise missions to the moon, funded by government grants, so these are private contractors who may well be undertaking fast and innovative solutions to meet their contract requirements, but it just wouldn't be happening without the government money, because right now there's just no profit to be made in lunar landings. Anyway, our point is that if you hear someone going on about old space and new space, it wouldn't be unreasonable to roll your eyes and maybe even scoff a little. It's a very simplistic categorization of the growing diversity and breadth of 21st century space activity, all of which is a good thing. And if you think launching 100 Starlink satellites in 6 months is more exciting than launching one James Webb Space Telescope in a decade, well, okay. It's understandable that anyone would find it exciting to work in the space industry, and making a lot of money from it can't hurt either. And maybe this is the way that things will always work. Big, slow government projects opening up new frontiers, and then private industry moving in to do things faster, quicker, and cheaper.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. The process of getting humanity into space has certainly begun, but the immediate next steps are as uncertain as ever, and they are not being taken quickly. That is partly the lack of significant economic drivers, and partly a lack of competition, although that could all change the moment China announces it will land a crew on the moon. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just want to introduce some macroeconomic reforms, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll tote up the balance sheet for you. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.